From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're listening to McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to McBride and Brennan. I'm David McBride. Dr. Robert Brennan is here with me.
I am indeed your wingman. Or
we
goose
are the,
or something worse.
Goose and Maverick, depending on who's who. One of us is Iceman and Maverick, I think.
And one of us might be Goose. I think it might be me. But anyway.
No, we're going to, today we've got a very special guest. And before I introduce her, I have to say that Dr. Robert's fine brain that got him through medical school while I was scraping through law school will be called upon to ask some of the hard questions while I do all the broad brush razzmatazz. But I have someone who is I have a huge regard for. She was one of the first people internationally to interview me as a whistleblower and give me some airtime. She famously joined an ABC program live and said, posed the question to the Australian government, what are you doing prosecuting this guy when he's actually just telling the truth? She's been supporting Julian Assange tirelessly when no one else would. Well, other people would, but as a media person and putting the message out there. And many of you will already know her in relation to incredibly brave work on the really big things going on with COVID and propaganda and false messaging. And it's hard to know, social credits. It's going to be a lot to talk about. So welcome to the show, Taylor Hudak.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for that very kind introduction. And David, it is always an honor to be working with you, supporting you, and just a pleasure to be here on your show alongside Dr. Brennan. So thank you guys for having me.
Not at all. I was so happy when you said yes, because you're over in Europe. It's very early in the morning for you to get up and be on our show. So it's very, very kind of you. And I know I've been excited all week. We've been putting it out there to have you on. It's hard to know with you what to talk about because you've got so many. You've got your finger on the button of so many big things that are going down and quite scary, I guess. And I don't know how you don't get overwhelmed sometimes with the breadth of the sort of stories and things that you're hearing. And how you keep your head above water because there seems to be bigger scandals every single week. So I don't know. I think maybe you talk about the vaccine and vaccine injury cover-ups. Tell us what it's been the hottest issue over in Europe in the last couple of weeks, perhaps.
Yeah, so you are right. I am in Europe. Obviously, I spent majority of my life and my work up until the past 2 years in America. So this is a bit of a change for me, but I am in Hungary at the moment. And to be honest, given the language barrier, it's a little bit difficult to understand exactly where people are here regarding the vaccination campaign. But I can say that I think that at this point, vaccine injury has become something that more and more people are talking about, and it's far more difficult to cover up. And I think an interesting point we're seeing here is that, there's a lot of blame to be put onto these pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer, for example. But I would actually say that the real entity that we should be placing blame here is the DOD. Because if you look at who was really in charge and overseeing this entire vaccine operation, it was the DOD, the Department of Defense in the United States, which is extremely unusual. And so it made me sort of ask the question, okay, how does this vaccine program really fall within the duties of the DOD? And in fact, just yesterday, last night, actually, I interviewed Sasha Latipova. She has had extensive background in pharmaceuticals and in the industry. She is no longer a part of the industry. And I just, had to ask her, how is that the role of the DOD to oversee something like this, given that it is their role to sort of ensure that the military is able to protect the the security of the United States? How does implementing these countermeasures that are causing harm to the American people fall into that? So I think we need to take a closer look at who was behind the management of all of this. And it's very interesting because while there was a public health emergency that was declared, this was treated since day one as a national security matter, which I find incredibly fascinating and also very disturbing.
Yeah, no, it's a buzzword and it's a very good point. It happens in my case as well. And I know why. I can, being a military insider and having some sort of insight, the reason that they use a national security emergency is once they classify it as that, no matter how inaccurate that might be, they have special powers which they can use, which they wouldn't normally be able to use. And so I'm a national security threat, you know, and which means that they can bug my phones. They can treat me different to a criminal. It means that they can set me up with sort of some sort of honey trap or some sort of entrapment because I'm a national security threat, in inverted commas. And the same thing would be with this. And this is what I worried about, and I think you would have seen this. By making a national security threat, it becomes too big to fail. You know, they start to have extreme powers. They could actually kill people, you know. Not that I'm suggesting that that's happened, but you have these powers that you can use as if someone was going to try to blow up a city or something, or use poison, put poison in the water supply. And you have these draconian powers, and you can. And what I used to think, one of the things that I used to think was, there must be some sort of adult supervision, you know, to make sure that you couldn't, you don't just declare national security for something which is not national security. And we don't just use these extreme measures made to stop suicide bombers blowing up schools. We don't start using them on just dissenting voices. But there isn't any adult supervision, and that is one of the scary things. They can misuse. It's hard to make people care about it, hard to make people see that it's sexy, but it means that they can, for quite political purposes, they can carry out, terrible things. And this is one of the, it's recently been in the news, and I don't really want to go into all the details on it, but the idea that the CIA or one of the security services was involved in President Kennedy's assassination. Now, they can get away, if that was the case, we're not going to go into that here, but if that was the case, they get around things like that by saying, this is a matter of national security, and therefore we can do X, Y, and Z under this. And it would be, there'd be pamphlets, there'd be PowerPoints, we can therefore do things where we are throwing the rule book out the window. We use information operations, what they call information operations, which you'd be aware of when they're just putting out false statements saying we need to do this for the country's good. It is something that has to be very, very highly policed. I think that is, you're right, it's not innocuous that the military were involved in doing that, because once the military are not, it seems logical to the unobserved that they can do, you know, flood relief, but they can't. They're not trained for that. And once they get involved, they're focused on purely what the government wants, and it's not necessarily a healthy thing. Anyway, tell us more about it.
Yeah, exactly. I see it as the use of military law to override national sovereignty. And, you know, you asked me about the situation in Europe. And upon doing some further research into all of this, I realized that these contracts are with the DOD in the United States. It's a little bit more complicated when it comes to these contracts, Pfizer's contract with the European countries. But say, for example, if a European citizen in the EU gets, you know, injured by this injection, if I don't know if you could even really call it a vaccine, but let's just say, you know, gets injured by these injections and they want to sue Pfizer, for example. Well, the state, that country, would have to put up military assets as collateral It's a very complicated scenario, but I found that to be extremely interesting. And it's almost virtually impossible to really sue these companies if you are to be vaccine injured. And I think that is just one of the horrible things about all of this. Now, of course, I'm not a medical professional. I'm a media person. And I have said since the beginning that the media played a serious role in all of this and was extremely complicit in causing harm to the public, because I feel more and more strongly as time goes on that the media's complicity, as I said, played a significant role here, because without their cooperation, the public couldn't have been completely sold on this issue. And you had people in the media who were advising people on what personal health decision was best for them. That's not the role of the media. The media should not be telling people to get vaccinated and probably shouldn't be telling people not to get vaccinated. I would never encourage anybody what personal health decision is right for them. But the media did that and continues to do that. And that was just really outside of their bounds and their duty to do that. So I think that there was extreme fault that has been done on behalf of those in journalism. It's really shameful, because as I said, without their cooperation, I don't know how this would have been able to have been pulled off. And it's very devastating, because if you look, I mean, people are really suffering out there. And I'm so proud to work alongside Children's Health Defense Europe. So Children's Health Defense is an organization primarily based in the United States, but it also has various branches and sister companies throughout the world. And one of them is in Europe. And I'm very proud to work with them in promoting health, and also trying to highlight the power and influence of the pharmaceutical industries and this attack on basic human rights, including bodily autonomy. And upon working with them, I've realized that the CDC's own studies admit, from 2022, that there's an increased risk, for example, of myocarditis and pericarditis in people aged 18 to 39 within 7 days of receiving the mRNA vaccine. And this showed, after just receiving the second Pfizer dose, that a person was 14 times at a greater risk. And then after the second Moderna shot, there was an 18 times greater risk compared to somebody who was unvaccinated. So at this point, it's becoming undeniable. And I hope that, those in media will pick up on this and start doing their jobs here. But it's been just really shameful to see people being conned into making a personal health decision that's irreversible.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's a very hard, this is one of the things that I had in my case. And so I saw, and I learned this slowly, but the problems we have in society are quite big. They are related in that it's not just the governments covering up things for various different political reasons, but the media will get on board with it. The media is generally owned. They might think they're doing the right thing. They don't think they're doing the wrong thing, but you're right. I think that was one of the most sinister or the most worrying things I saw about the COVID was the blanket media. Everyone fell behind. Anyone who had a dissenter like yourself, even in this show, they've done such a good job in Australia, and I suppose everywhere else as well, but I can only talk for Australia. I'll probably get sort of demonised for even, speaking about these issues. But the people who are on TNT, we get called crazy people and, we're painted as if you're a terrorist or something like that for even talking about these issues. It's still been quite successful the way anyone who didn't want it, who was even hesitant or even had a second opinion, was just steamrolled and called a lunatic and all these kind of things. But I was vaccinated, but I could see I really had sympathy for those that weren't, and they were sort of like the Jews before the Second World War. You couldn't work, you couldn't do this, you couldn't do that. You were criticised for everything. I was ready to hide them in my house because I could see that was wrong, and I could see that was driven. I couldn't believe how compliant the media were. Yeah, we had ads here that looked like 1984, saying get vaccinated. It was a bit like, join up the army in the First World War or something. If you don't, you're a coward. And at all this stuff, which was, they did a very, I have to admit, from a professional point of view, they did a very good job at well, it's hard to use any other word apart from brainwashing, but getting the public over it. And it concerned me because you think, where are we going in the future if the government can have a narrative? And you and I know that the government's narrative is not always a particularly good one, because they can put that over with media and they can make anyone that opposes the narrative to be some sort of evil person. And then they can take extreme measures against people who are actually just standing up for the very values that we are meant to stand for. Truth in government, abiding by the law. I mean, simple sort of things, as I said, we even from our conversation today, we'll probably get sort of hate mail or whatever. It's just, and that's why I've got such admiration for you. It's a hard space to work in, and you are out there every day at the coalface, or at the, should I say, in the trenches, breaking new stories on this. Uh-huh. And I just admire your warrior spirit, because it's it's a battle. It really is a battle, and you've got to take a lot of slings and arrows.
Mutual.
And I like to think mutual. We're a bit like the...
Respect here. We're going to go to an ad break. This is TNT.
Trish Wood on TNT Radio.
Doctors at Duke University, where Yulia has been awaiting a kidney transplant, have told her parents they will not give her a new kidney unless she is vaccinated against COVID, even though Yulia has already had and recovered from COVID. What's interesting about this story is that Chrissy Hicks, she had some audio of the doctors explaining why they would not give Yulia the kidney transplant she so needs. And what was interesting about it was the absolute lack of empathy and humanity in the voice of those doctors. And it's something that I've come to fully have taken on board during COVID, that medicine now seems to be kind of medicine practiced by guidelines and rules, right? It's not directed at the individual patient. It's practiced by guidelines and rules. I don't understand how people so committed, or allegedly so committed, to saving and nurturing human life could make a decision like this and tolerate a policy like this.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swinging in reason.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice. It has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
Info at your beck and call.
The stunning developments.
Stay tuned for updates.
Just tell your smart device to play TNT Radio.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower, and I'm here with my co-host, wingman, Goose Brennan,
Dr.
Robert
right.
Brennan, and we've got Taylor Hudak all the way from Europe.
From Europe, yes, with a heavy European accent. Taylor, I don't know if you remember me, but we shared a Zoom platform way back in the dark days of 2020, a dissident doctors group. You were chairing it.
And, okay.
Yeah. And you were chairing this group. And looking back and looking forward, you remember that we had all these dissident doctors. These were the days before the great Thomas Binder was arrested for misinformation and the like. But mm-hmm. I recall that there was a lot of bickering. There was a lot of like intellectuals, whose antlers are the biggest antlers? Let's clash. You know, you recall that. And so, so looking back and looking forward, what you've experienced division within. You know, there's basically people have fallen down on two sides of a line here: anti-lockdown, pro-lockdown; anti-narrative, pro-narrative. So looking at the division within our side, and what's your reflections upon that? What are the sources of it? What could be the remedies towards unity?
That's a really great question. So I will say one thing about those on our side. I would say that there is an we allow for disagreement on these fine details, and we're able to talk those issues out, whereas the other side doesn't want to hear it. I have had numerous doctors tell me that they have tried to get those on the other side who were, you know, in favor of these vaccines to even come for a debate, and they will not do it. They will not even have the discussion. But those on our side will. Of course, there is going to be clashes on the finer details, and a lot of that we have to realize could be coming from planted disinformation. What comes to mind here is I remember several months ago, there was talk about snake venom being in the vaccines, which was blatant disinformation to likely cause division. I don't know what the source is to discredit, but, you know, just to be aware that that is something that could happen. But I'm glad you bring up the point of doctors, because that's a really important point here. Some people may be listening to this, or if they share this interview with friends or family, they say, hey, why would we listen to the three of these guys? You know, my doctor told me that this vaccine is safe and effective. It's going to protect me and my family. Well, a lot of people need to realize here that in order to pull all of this off, doctors had to be completely controlled. And there was an extensive effort to control the doctors through money. Dr. Meryl Nass has spoken about this extensively, and she is just a brilliant doctor. And in fact, her license was temporarily suspended, and she is fighting to get it back. And she's in this sort of legal battle right now because she was treating her patients for COVID early on, and also speaking out against the vaccines. But anyways, she has been speaking out about sort of the threats against doctors. And if you look at what happened in March 2020, you know, then President Trump signed off on an $8 billion bill. Congress spent $5 trillion for the pandemic response, and a lot of this money was going to bribe the institutions and the hospitals. And so many doctors, you know, were bribed, and this also happened in Germany. I think doctors are receiving like 4,500 euros extra a month, I want to say, for giving 5 jabs per day. Again, my figures may not be completely accurate, but I did post about this on my social media accounts. But the point is that there's a lot of money that doctors are making off of this crisis, and so they're very much controlled. So that may be why your doctor, for example, if you're listening right now, your doctor could be encouraging you to get this vaccine. And there's also been other, you know, regulatory measures taken. For example, on July 29th, 2021, the Federation of State Medical Boards, which is a medical organization that has control over licensure in the United States, and it serves all of the medical boards in America, released a statement that physicians who generate or spread COVID vaccine misinformation or disinformation are risking disciplinary action by the state medical boards. And this includes suspension of their medical license. Now, this was revoked, then sort of put back into place shortly thereafter, but in a different format. But the point here is that, you know, these doctors are being heavily controlled, possibly losing their licenses and everything that they worked hard for. if they are to speak out against this vaccine. So that's a really big problem that we're seeing. And that could probably help explain to people why maybe their doctor is encouraging them to get this jab.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And you and I go way back to a time when the vaccine was just a glint in the eye of Pfizer executive and AstraZeneca and that, when it was all about lockdown and viral origins and masks and just we were all just shell-shocked at the revolution that happened in February, March 2020. And even, you know, going back to Thomas Binder as an example, one of the early deplatformings from Twitter, it was just like, this is real, what's happening to us now. And now we're looking at the other side of it, but are we really? Because we've got the WHO pandemic treaty in the works with their they've recently had the meetings of their international negotiating body, their intergovernmental negotiating body, where one of the key issues is the control of information and the tackling of disinformation, the social listening and analysis and how to shut down what they call infodemics. So like with David, you were talking about the metaphor of war and national security applied to viruses. We even have the metaphor of viral pandemics applied to information in the media space. And we have to shut down the viral ideas that are yours and David's and mine. It's really a scary future we're looking into.
Well, last week I saw a story, it's a couple of weeks old, from the UK about one of their talking about Taylor. I mean, people might be listening to Taylor and thinking that that's not right. It's hard for us to imagine that the US DOD are so involved in it. But in the UK, an army unit called 77 Battalion or 77 Brigade, actually, which is bigger than a battalion, which is it's basically a misinformation unit, and they were out there rubbishing anyone who didn't follow the line on COVID. They said they weren't, but what they were doing is they were monitoring social media accounts. They were sending the information to the Prime Minister's office to say, this is what such and such a person is saying, this is what such and such, and obviously with a view to targeting those people with counter narratives or shutting them up or closing down their accounts. They were soldiers who were meant to be protecting at the country and luckily there was a whistleblower, I'm happy to say, a whistleblower in 77 Brigade who said, look, this is not right. He had enough knowledge to say that's not what soldiers are meant to be doing, monitoring the accounts of people who don't particularly want, the vaccine, and then using the government to shut them down. It's hard. You guys get it, but it's hard. That is the beginning of the end, when the government starts shutting down dissent on spurious grounds and using all the military resources at their disposal to do so, and then locking up people like us and saying that, oh, we were terrorists or whatever. It's a slippery slope for the government to be deciding what's real information and what's false and what people need to be imprisoned for.
Right. Yeah. And, Dr. Brennan, you mentioned Thomas Binder a few times. I've spoken about his case before. I did an interview with Dr. Binder, but just for the listeners, Dr. Binder is a cardiologist from Switzerland who was very vocal in early 2020 that the measures that were taken to suppress the spread of COVID-19 were nonsensical. He was basically speaking out. He tried to reach out to the media. He tried to speak to Swiss politicians. He tried to talk to his colleagues. Nobody was listening to him. So then he started to write blog posts just, explaining to the public, everything is fine. No need to have an over-the-top panic. This is, just a normal, cold, virus. Some people, may have a bad reaction to it depending on your age or your risk associated with that. And he was just speaking, things that that is now accepted information today. And again, this is early 2020. And he was about to go on vacation on the Easter holiday. And before he was able to do that, he was confronted by 60 armed police guards. Some of them were with the anti-terrorism unit in his canton in Switzerland. They tried to arrest him. Upon, you know, further examining the situation, they realized that that was not appropriate. And so they did not arrest him. But what they did do is that they brought in some mental health officials to examine his mental health. And they determined, to their standard, that he was suffering from, I'm quoting here, corona insanity. He was suffering from corona insanity, which is not a real, you know, psychological disorder. And then he was placed into a psychiatric unit and he was forced to take a medication. And this was all because he spoke out against the COVID restrictions. So we see the weaponization of mental health here as well. So the silencing of dissent, as both of you are saying, but also the weaponization of mental health is something to be very, very aware of. And it's very frightening. And this also happened to others as well. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that I was just going to say that that's really quite chilling. I mean, that is quite chilling. And people, but that I was going to jump in because that's what happened to me when I first started agitating in the Defence Force. I was psychologically, mandatory psychologically reviewed, which is, they just kind of ambush you one day in your office and they say, you're going to the side. And having been a lawyer, because one of the things you look at is in the military is that's one way I know because to get rid of people, you know, because when you do that, you kind of, it's not really, it's sort of a rigged casino and you know that the psychiatrist is going to, you know, basically say the person's crazy or whatever. In my case, they didn't. They said he's angry, but he's not crazy. And then they did it again. They weren't happy with the result and they did it again. And they did it a third time. And eventually, I thought, well, God, I may as well go on sick leave. But it's... that happens in Australia as well. And in fact, our eight, while that you may seem for listeners in Australia to think, wow, that's never going to happen here, but that actually happened 10 years ago with the taxation office. And the taxation office, and I think they learnt this from the Americans, when they had dissenters, they've sent them to psychiatrists. And the psychiatrist basically said, this is a gaslit them and said, paid for by the Defence Department, of course, or the tax department in this case. And the psychiatrist said, this is all in your imagination. But that's terrible, Taylor, about that case in Switzerland. I mean, that's got my hairs standing on end. I mean, that's just, it's hard to believe.
Right. And you know what, David, I remember this about your case, that you had to have this mandatory psychological review. So this is happening in Australia, happening in Switzerland, US. Also, there was a woman, a female lawyer in Germany who was also placed in a psychiatric unit because she was speaking out and trying cases related to the COVID lockdowns, you know, arguing that they were unlawful in Germany. She was also placed in a psychiatric unit. And once you are placed in these psychiatric units, I'm not too familiar with exactly what your rights are, but I would assume that your rights are very limited, and it's very frightening what could happen to those who are placed in these facilities. It reminds me of, you know, it's just very dystopian, let's say. In these units. Sure. Yeah,
no, it's very, I mean, that's what happened to me. I saw this psychiatrist, and of course, being a, because you don't expect, this is not the world I grew up in and or expected. And when I was sent to the psychiatrist, I didn't think any of it. He was a sort of smooth guy in a nice office, and we spoke for. And the first thing he did is put me on this medication, which was very strong and slowed me down. You know, really slowed me down, and it. I didn't think anything of it at the time. I wasn't, it certainly was beyond my, I wasn't suspicious, but it was only later. And then he tried to talk me out of being a whistleblower. He said, and he wouldn't have any legal qualification. He said, oh, look, you don't have a legal leg to stand on. And then
Wow. That's
I know. And I was like, exactly. And it's true. And then he was like, I was like, surely if people were killing some, I tried to reason with him because I didn't click to begin with. I said, surely if people were dying in the hospital you were working in and you suspected the leadership had something to do with it, you can't tell me that, you know, non-disclosure agreement would stop you going to, you know, see the police or something about it. And he was like, no, I wouldn't do that. You know, it's totally, you don't have a leg to stand on. And it was only afterwards I thought, hang on, he was trying to gaslight me. And then he said the only reason, I was like talking about war crimes or whatever, and he was like, oh, well, you've only, the reason you think this is because you've got a sense of entitlement. Yep. It's laughable now.
Narcissistic personality disorder.
You're a narcissist.
You're quite paranoid.
And it's good to be talking to you because I can laugh. But obviously, I reckon they would have celebrated if I'd killed myself. They are that sinister. And the mind boggles. The people that we used to think are kind of trustworthy, the sort of things that they will do. To win, you know, their argument or whatever, you know, it's quite outrageous. I'm really quite shocked.
There would have been a funding application for suicide research because these, you know, disordered, paranoid guys in the military are taking their lives.
It's not
caused by the system itself, but anyway.
No, that's it. I knew they would have gone. They would have the first because they're so interested in meeting, expectations. The first thing they would have done if I'd killed myself was write a really big check to my wife and said, oh, this is another PTSD victim. We're so sorry, you know. What can we do? You know, it was just sickening. They were just sort of sickening.
Well, try and stay alive all throughout this ad break. This is TNT.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Previously, I told you about how the National Hockey League is going woke. I pointed to an ad that they put out urging interested parties to attend a gathering in Florida during the recent All-Star Weekend, the Pathway to Hockey Summit. But white people were left out of those who were welcome to attend. And when it was pointed out to them by the governor of Florida, the league said it was a mistake. Then, of course, a player on the Flyers caught hell for not participating in a pregame skate with rainbow jerseys and ribbons on their sticks to promote the LGBT agenda. But it gets worse. The AP says that back in 2017, the league hired Kim Davis, an executive vice president of social impact growth and legislative affairs, to lead a diversity and inclusion campaign. Inclusion? Only 25% of the players are American-born. But the league says more than 90% of the league's players and nearly half of all its coaches and officials are white. So what? In the NBA, nearly three-quarters of the players are black. Only 16% are white, according to Wikipedia. Where's the inclusion effort to even out that disparity? Don't make me laugh. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
How often should you wash your hands?
Maybe around 9 times a day.
4? Like 20?
Maybe twice a day.
Whenever they feel dirty.
When should you wash your hands?
After you touch some raw meat.
And before starting to eat.
At the beginning, I wash my hands before preparing food.
How would you rate your knowledge of food safety?
Probably like an 8 out of 10.
6 or 7.
7.5. Like, I know the basics, but I'm not necessarily like an expert in it by any means.
Food safety, it's in your hands.
Stop the jab and save lives.
The COVID vaccine does not work.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower, and I'm joined here with the good Dr. Robert Brennan and Taylor Hudak.
Mm-hmm. Taylor, I've got a couple of other questions here. Now, you know, given that you're in the Europe, you've missed out on a good balloon show flying across the US. But what's the take in Europe across the countries that you've, you know, you've been talking to people, media and regular folk, so far as the US situation? So, you know, you've got, will WrestleMania Trump get in the ring against Weekend at Bernie's Biden? You've got the Ukraine war. What's the, on those two issues, what's the people's position in Europe?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you're right. I did miss out on the balloon show in the United States, and I am not regretful in any way that I got to miss out on that one. The sentiment in Europe, that's really interesting. I would say here, so I'm in Hungary, so somewhat close to where this conflict is, you know, taking place in Ukraine. Hungary has, on the surface, taken a different stance than the rest of the EU and is somewhat paying the price for that. I think, you know, it's fair to say that Hungary has become sort of an enemy of the EU. But it's a country that has, on the surface, as I said, taken a different stance on this, has blocked, you know, weapons being transported through Hungary to Ukraine. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that the government, for on the surface, again, is trying to put the Hungarian people's well-being first. Now, to be clear, I do not speak the language. It's a very difficult language. So it's hard for me to really dig into the heart of what's really going on here. But I would say that generally people, at least in this country, the people that I talk to who are in Europe, are not supportive of shipping what money and weapons to Ukraine and do not support the United States doing that either. And honestly question where that money is going, because it's doubtful it's going to Ukraine, because I just don't understand how that military can manage all of this, all of these weapons and all of the money that's being sent to them. Maybe you, David, would be better to speak on this, but I mean, they're receiving so much support. How could that military even manage it? That's a question that I have. But to be clear, war in Ukraine is not something I've been following too closely, just surface level. But I think that the mentality here from the people that I speak to, again, who are similar minded to myself, do not support the United States involvement and don't want their own countries supporting this war in Ukraine either.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunately, whenever there's fear, there is money and there's unscrupulous behavior. Now, I read somewhere this morning about how much of the COVID emergency money has gone missing. And because it was just like crazy amounts of money, if they'd said to Congress or the Australian equivalent to say, we need $6 trillion or whatever to beat this disease, which is going to is an existential threat to Australia, they would have got it. But of course, we're following the money trail. You've got all sorts of unscrupulous people taking a cut of that. And that is particularly in war. And it pains me, the whole Ukraine thing, because I saw it in Afghanistan. I saw the results and I saw what happened. Ukraine now is almost a mirror image of Afghanistan in the 1980s, where we just poured the Saudis and the Americans just poured dollar for dollar money in to anyone who just said, we will kill Russians, we want to kill Russians. And we armed all these people who had no idea what they were doing and were not trustworthy. And eventually they did kill Russians, but the Russians left and they just killed each other. And they would have, then they got disgruntled and they went to America and they killed a lot of Americans. And you can see it's exactly the same thing. They were just, they're just trying to kill Russians, just trying to kill. And if you say you're going to kill Russians, you'll get, it doesn't matter who you were. We've seen the way that the media completely backflipped on this sort of neo-Nazi Azov battalions who in 2020 were the villains of the world and now they're the heroes. And it's they're giving them all sorts of anti-aircraft missiles that could be used on civilian air, and they will eventually become disgruntled. A lot of the money in Ukraine would have just gone straight into the pockets of unscrupulous people, because if you say you need, you know, $2 billion for armaments, the world is it's a bit like COVID. There's such a frenzy. The Americans, you can see it in the United States now, that people are starving in the United States and they don't have basic health care, and yet they cannot give enough money to the Ukraine for armaments. And anyone, as you said, even Hungary or even Germany, when they had some sort of hesitation about sending tanks, and there were some voices of reason in Germany, they were all shouted down, how dare you? How dare you not want to do this? And so if you want to make money, if you want to turn public money into private money and skim money off, it's a fan. Once the drums of war are beating, or once they're playing this, oh, this is a fight for freedom, or this disease is going to wipe us all out, once the fear strikes in, money is getting stolen hand over fist, because as soon as you you could be a whistleblower against the money being stolen by unscrupulous so-called freedom fighters, and you would be the one who would end up in jail or dead, you know, because it is so, everyone's lost their sense of reason and logic. And maybe a lot of the people who are voting for all those huge amounts of money to go there are quite well aware of the fact that it's been misused, and they're getting backhanders in political donations, etc. I think it's, having seen this movie before in Afghanistan, it really worries me because it is exactly the same thing. The only thing that's done better is that the media, and this is, it's a hangover from COVID, the media blackout. The media is so completely universal. There's no, you don't read anyone saying, well, there's us. There's a French resistance out there fighting away, but there's not many people that really, there's certainly no one in the mainstream is prepared to point out the faults and the dangers of just pouring money into a space and just giving it to anyone who says they want to kill Russians.
And Taylor, on that cheery note, what about the hope for America? Is it going to hell in a handbasket, managed decline, sliding into unmanaged decline, or is there hope? I mean, what's your take?
Yeah, that's a good question as far as solutions. So I would say not just for America, but for anyone. We're seeing the centralization of, you know, controls. We're seeing that really... Or let me rephrase that. We're seeing this centralization of powers more than we've, you know, ever really seen before, at least in recent history. I, you know, was listening in on the previous guest who was speaking about CBDCs, and that's just such an important message to get out there because that's also a big component in all of this. And also the digital ID, of course, and the vaccine passport system. So I would say we have a lot of hope for the future if we just do not comply. If we do not comply with the mandates again, if we don't comply with the lockdowns, if we don't comply with something as, you know, seemingly arbitrary as mask mandates, just don't comply. If we all said no, we'd be in a much very different position today. But unfortunately, the majority of us went along with this, sadly. Sadly, that's what happened. So if we just don't comply, we'd be in a better situation. And I know it's easy for me to say that because in some places, say in an airport, for example, I mean, you couldn't get on a plane without wearing a mask at one point. And if you tried to argue with them, you would be, you know, kicked off and probably not allowed to use the airline again, for example. But if everybody did this, we would be able to have a chance. So I would say invest in your local communities. And this goes back to my point about the centralization of power here. Invest in your local communities. Invest in your local banks. That's also really, really important. Also, if you can, I know not all countries, especially in Europe, homeschooling is something that is not something that you can do in many European countries. But if you are in a place where you can, maybe that's an option for you. Homeschooling, because the schools are just really going off the rails here. And just surrounding yourself with like-minded people. You don't have to win over the minds of everybody. We don't need to do that. But if we band together with those who think, you know, like us and who have the same goals and who are interested in taking initiative and supporting, you know, their local community, we can really make a lot of progress here. And I think that really goes back again to what the previous person was speaking about in the warnings with CBDCs, because that's a complete totalitarian system. And it's not really a currency, you know, central bank digital currency is what a CBDC is, but it's actually not a currency. It's a completely different financial transaction system. If they don't want you leaving or going within 5 miles or 5 kilometers of your house, you won't be able to. You won't be able to purchase anything beyond that distance. If they don't want you to buy a steak, you're not going to be able to buy that steak. So if they don't want you to travel because you surpassed your carbon allowance for the month, you're not going to be able to get on a plane. So I think it's important to just resist, because once we're there, once they implement the CBDCs and the digital ID, there's no going back. It'll be extremely difficult to undo that structure.
Yeah.
very worrying. And but I agree, and it's in some ways it's a really it's a heroic struggle, and it's fantastic that we're doing it. But you're right. This is exactly the sort of thing. If you depict it, this is exactly the sort of thing that anyway, I grew up thinking that this is the sort of stuff that you would fight against. And you know, if someone tried to invade you and put up and put in all these things, of course you'd be wanting to fight them. But of course, it's a bit more sinister. It's coming in from our own governments. But the idea that my children will be wearing a mask, you know, when they go shopping in 50 years' time, or it creeps me. But then, without any reason, and I think one of the most awful things is when they had, some sort of expensive ball in the US. We saw a money apartheid where those who are wealthy enough don't have to wear masks, but the rest of the sort of proletariat have to wear and, you know, go around in hazmat suits. Yeah. And it's just creepy, isn't it? That is so creepy. Yeah. I got really creeped out by that. Yeah.
It creeped me out too. And you know what? I forgot one of the most important things, and that is to use cash when you can. I know it may seem, you know, inconvenient to use cash, but trust me, do it now, because you do not want to be living in this system with a digital ID and CBDC. So use cash. Don't use a credit card. I actually will refuse to shop at a certain location if they won't accept cash. I have done that before where I've just left. And I think, again, if everybody did this, it would make such a statement. So use cash. I'm very fortunate. I am in Hungary, so it is easy to use cash. I know some places won't accept cash. But where they do use cash, it's a really important tool to fight back.
It's good. I like that one. And that's pretty easy to do. I can get my very small weekly pay packet out and actually have that cash. Because I do resent it sometimes. There are places, it started with COVID and they're still doing it, that just have a sign up saying, don't take cash. And you think, where does that come? Yeah, but it is a good idea to say to people, vote with your feet and just stop.
Right.
All the good businesses do, of course. You say, do you take cash? And they look at you like you're mad and they go, of course I do. But, you're right. And it's actually something easy to do, get your money out once a week and go around and start putting cash back into the economy. I agree, because I hate the idea of not being able to, social credits, and then because then they really can get you, or you didn't wear a mask, therefore we're freezing your bank account. Well, I've already done that in Canada.
Right.
You know, exactly. We've had one of our YouTubers, guy who's a pretty innocuous sort of guy, as usual, like most YouTubers, a combination of humor and political satire, they froze his bank account. You know, totally overly, you know, they wouldn't even let anyone donate to him. Now that's, so it's already happening. I agree. You're right. We have to, we have to start now. We have to start now and to try to fight the idea that we're the crazy ones. We're the bad ones. We're fighting for all the things that we really are important.
Right. Let me just say that, it's important to be comfortable being the different person in a situation. I'm very comfortable sort of being the odd one in a situation. I had numerous instances where I've had to argue with people about masks, things like that. I'm very comfortable being in that position. I'm very comfortable leaving a place if they don't accept cash. We all have to get to the point where we're comfortable being the different one in a public situation. You don't have to cause a scene. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying get arrested or be belligerent. That is not at all what I'm saying, but just politely refuse to comply. Again, politely, don't do anything that is going to get you into legal trouble. That's not at all what I'm advocating for, but politely refuse to comply and surround yourself with like-minded people. And yes, we are certainly who are working in the right direction here, not the other side, that is for sure.
The French Resistance, I like to say, Taylor. I like to think you're yeah. out there on your own. You remind me of some of those Dutch teenage girls that were helping downed airmen, and when they were like that, they were escaping through the over the mountains sometimes, and they couldn't believe that they were being helped by these young people who were just courageous, and some of them even got captured and killed. But it's just like you're out there on your own. You can imagine just one day deciding, no, I'm not going to help them. I'm not going to help this government. I'm going to help people trying to escape from it. It's an incredibly brave thing to do. But I think it's a great message to say, just be polite. Don't be the belligerent one, of course, because that can be used against you and people can say, oh, look at this person. That we've had lots of that here filming this. But, oh, look at this person got really angry about not being admitted. But, let's win them over with kind. I'm sure that, you're always polite. And if you start to, because people judge you by the way, obviously, by the way we do things. And that's
David,
a great piece of advice.
When we need to run away to Hungary, we've got an agent on the inside.
I know, we do. Someone's going to hide
Taylor
us. Hungary's the place
agent.
To go.
Well, thank you guys for having me. One last message. I just want to let the audience know, I forgot to mention this, that the digital systems are a pathway to totalitarian control. The digital systems are, which is why I said use cash and to just invest in your local communities, your small banks, local banks. Thank you guys for having me. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Catch you later.
Thank you so much, Taylor.
Thank you. This is TNT.
You can go back to bed now.